Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Empire.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. Do me a favor, subscribe to the John Comm Report wherever you get your podcast. You're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. You can find us there as part of Empire Media. That's A-M-P-I-R-E. Always much appreciated when you tune in. And don't forget, you can always read my work on ESPN.com. I'll have a story up soon, whether it's Thursday or Friday, about the Commanders' choices at number two, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or J.J. McCarthy. Maybe. Anyway, I have them ranked in the order that based on talking to people around the league, that I think it would look like. One other note along those lines, that Jaden Daniels will be visiting the Commanders next week. He'll arrive in town Monday night, and then he'll be at the facility on Tuesday. And then Drake May arrives on Tuesday night and will be at the facility on Wednesday. Those visits are key. They will not make up their minds. They may have a lean, but they're not going to make up their minds until they get through these visits. And they don't have to make up their mind before they get through these visits. These visits are crucial to in this whole process. Anyway, so there you go. Now, today I'm joined by Eric Edholm, who writes for NFL Media. So his work appears on NFL.com. He analyzes the draft, does power rankings throughout the NFL season. And I wanted to bring him on. I've known Eric for a long time. He worked for Pro Football Weekly. He's analyzed the draft for many years and does a really good job. So I wanted to bring him on to talk about the non-quarterback choices, because I hear from a few of you, and I'm with you. I want to know more than just about the quarterbacks. I will keep talking about the quarterbacks because the draft is 2 weeks away, and this is an important choice for the organization. But they can remake their organization by having a really good draft in the first couple of rounds with all those picks. So I wanted to bring Eric on. He has a top 100 list that he puts a lot of work into. And so I wanted to get some stuff from him and also some maybe possible mid to late round gems that he thinks might be a good pick for, whether it's for the Commanders or someone else. Yes, we do talk a little bit about the quarterbacks because it is required at this point to do that, but it's very, very heavy on the non-quarterback aspect of the draft. So figured a good chance to talk about that. And again, we'll get back to the other stuff because I have a few more guests coming on who will be talking about quarterbacks over the next 2 weeks. Anyway, here you go. Here's my conversation with Eric Edholm from NFL Media. Well, Eric, first of all, it's good to see you again. It's been a while. So for people listening, I used to do some work for Pro Football Weekly. Eric was the editor I would always talk to. Pro Football Weekly, Eric, was always probably the publication I think I most enjoyed doing stuff for, because you guys were, you, Keith Schlide, and everybody over there was so good to deal with. But I miss that. I miss that.
Yeah. Those were the good old days, right? I mean, obviously the internet was coming into fruition, and the print products were being phased out, but there were so many people who wrote us and said, I don't care, I'm riding till the wheels go off. And so we had very loyal supporters. We had great correspondents, of which you were one, and always enjoyed our chats and still enjoy them now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but before we get started, tell people where they can find you and get all your work.
Yeah, I'm at NFL Media now. I'm almost done with my full second year there. I do power rankings are kind of my main focus during the season. Draft becomes, you know, December, January is really when I pivot full time to draft stuff. And it's over at NFL.com. You'll see the podcast for the power rankings during the season, doing some draft hits here and there, and plenty of stuff going up before and after April 25th, that is.
So I want to talk to you about the non-quarterbacks. We'll probably get it. I'm going to touch on quarterbacks later because I think by law, I'm required to ask a couple of questions about quarterbacks.
Of course.
But I do think that there's a lot of us who are quarterbacked out in Washington just because, like, it's been such a heavy focus for a long time. So I do want to start with one of the things. You had an article recently on NFL.com about 9 teams that really have to hit in this draft. And of course, Washington, I think, was 4th on your list. Just what, you know, explain, I think, for any Washington fans, but like explain your rationale there and how can this draft help them revitalize the franchise?
Yeah, first of all, it was paring it down from 32 teams to 9. I didn't have a set number, right? I tried to sort of rank them a little bit and put them in tiers, and Washington ended up being in that top group. And 9 felt like a good number, right? I like a good odd number. But obviously, it's been, you know, kind of swab the decks and refresh everything and start from scratch in a lot of ways. And that process has already begun. You know, you and I were talking off air about some of the nice, maybe lower level, but impressive moves that the new regime has started off with. And I really did feel like this roster needed a foundation and a starting point. So they're off to a good start. I might've put them higher on the list had they been a little more quiet during free agency, but getting that kind of that baseline in there was important, I felt. But such key positions, I feel like, hang in the balance right now. Offensive tackle, pass rusher, and oh yeah, quarterback among them. I could even argue, you know, corner, wide receiver. So, I mean, like, if you said those were the 5 most important positions on a football field, I don't know that I would argue with you, you know? So that alone, I think, gives you an idea of the great. You've filled out the bottom third of the roster. The middle portion maybe isn't too bad, but now we start have to adding high priority positions and high talent players. So, you know, that alone, along with, you know, 3 guys in the power seats that haven't really worked together, Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury and Adam Peters, and you know, how will this arranged marriage work? Sometimes that first draft, there's that process is a feeling out thing. So all those factors and where they sit in the draft and the number of picks they have in the top 100-110 slots, I mean, that, you know, you could argue they were, you know, they should have been higher on the list.
And to be honest, like, I think you can make a case for a couple teams up there, but I could have made a case, like, especially for them with so many picks in the top 100. Yeah. And like you said, you know, they need a left tackle, they need a quarterback, an edge rusher, and a cornerback, and even a receiver. Like, those are all spots in this draft, in that top 100, that it feels like you could find a good player at. Am I right or wrong on that?
Absolutely. In fact, that was one of the rationales in the back of my head for maybe not having them at the top of the list, because it does seem to kind of line up pretty nicely for them. I mean, you know, of those positions, I don't know that you would venture to say that any of them are quote unquote weak in this draft class. There's at least depth and or high end talent. And I think at, you know, at least 3 or 4 of them, if not all of them. So yeah, I think that part of it, plus having solved some, you know, checked off a lot of smaller boxes along the way, puts them in a very good position. And I'm excited to see what they do. I mean, obviously, like you said, it does start out with the quarterback pick and the assumed quarterback pick, and that'll be the big headline from Thursday. But do they entertain trading into the back end of round 1 if one of those great tackles is there? You know, if there's a pass rusher who lingers, is that an option for them? I know they picked fairly early on Friday, but, you know, they may not be done Friday or Thursday night if after the pick at 2.
And that's the other thing too. I was going to ask you, and this is a hard thing to predict.
Yeah,
but then it's going to depend on when does the run on tackles start and who needs them. So for you, where is this? If they wanted to trade up, they want to get a guy who can come in day 1 and be a starting left tackle in this league. First of all, who do you like? But also, where would they have to get into the first? For a couple of questions. Could they find that guy in the second round? If not, where do you have to go into the first round to get him?
Yeah, I think the offensive linemen are most likely to start coming off the board. I suppose it could happen as early as number 5 with the Chargers, depending on what they do. And then it probably starts at Tennessee at 7, if not. You know, if both those teams pass on a tackle, then all of a sudden, I think that's when the conversations, you know, that we're talking about right now might start happening, whether it's in Washington or some other team, where you say, hey, this thing started a little bit later. Could one of those first round talents be pushed into the late 20s? Right now, you know, with so many teams in that middle part of round one, I think looking for offensive line help, whether it's, you know, Seattle, Cincinnati, I certainly could see the Raiders doing it if they don't draft a quarterback, on and on. I mean, you could just list about at least half a dozen teams that, you know, Cowboys, certainly the offensive line would be a pick. So I think if you get ahead of Dallas at 24, like if you're thinking about trading up, you may have to go that high. First of all, it's a division rival. Second of all, there are a couple teams in that range that may want to trade down depending on who picks, you know, in the Miami, Philly, I'm trying to think who's 23rd, Minnesota, now that they have that pick. Some of them may want to move down, and that could open up some possibilities. Now, it also depends on whether you consider, you know, let's say, you know, Troy Fatuanu from Washington. Some have him as a guard. You know, I say give him a shot at tackle. I think some teams are willing to do that. Jordan Morgan from Arizona, kind of a borderline first second rounder. He might fall into that category too. And there are a couple others who some teams may view them as a guard, others as a tackle. So again, not knowing how all 32 teams define these guys, I think you could see 8 offensive linemen go in the first round. I mean, which is a big number. That's 25%. 7 would be a more realistic number, but, you know, it wouldn't shock me either way.
So who is there a couple guys in the second round that you would say, like, if this guy's there in the second round, it's a really good pick?
Yeah, at offensive line, you mean?
Yeah, it's tackle in particular.
Tackle in particular, yeah. I'm just kind of scanning my list here. See, that's the problem. I feel like on my – the top 100 list that just went live a few minutes before we spoke. It's a little bit of a, I have guards like Cooper Beebe. I don't think you really want to play him at tackle. I guess you could, but Morgan, I mentioned he's my number 33 player. I want to say overall. So that's kind of right in that neighborhood, you know, might just lack the length for some teams to safely protect him to tackle. In that area, it's a little bit tough. In fact, boy, I'm kind of looking at my list and that's a little bit of a wasteland in that area. So that's why the trade up option may exist or maybe have to be discussed given that they have what I think 5 picks on day 2. So, you know, could you use them all? Absolutely. Might you be willing to part with 2 to get 1 higher pick? I think it comes up because there is seemingly a drop off after that first kind of lump of players of that position. Now, let me just kind of look through my list a little bit more and see if there's anybody else. Sua Mataia from BYU, Kingsley Sua Mataia is an interesting one. I'm not as high on him as other people are. Patrick Paul, I think the same thing at Houston. I think I see him more as a third round pick than a second rounder, but other teams may have a little higher grade on him. The interesting name for day 2 that I've heard more recently than I had previously in draft season was Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, who came in as a higher rated recruit than Joe Alt, even though Alt had the bloodlines and all that. Fisher, I think I'd love to see him dominate a little bit more, but I can see the appeal. I think he just, you know, he's got the length. He could play tackle. I don't think he's a elite finisher, but I think he's certainly got the goods to play either right or left tackle in the NFL, and he might be an option as well.
So what would be, if you're looking for their early in the second round, what area do you think might provide better value? Now, again, because clearly they want to get a left tackle, but you also, like, we both know you, when you force picks, you get into trouble. So is there a better value, do you think, in those early second round picks at another position?
Yeah, I think edge rusher might be a little bit more appealing because there could be some, you know, hard to project exactly where some of these guys will go. Like, I mean, I think Laiatu Latu is most likely a first round pick, but he could linger to the second round. And I've said, you know, there's some Ryan Kerrigan to his game. I don't think he's exactly that, but I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he has a good career if the health holds up. So if teams are concerned about his health long term, maybe he drops. Hard to know how all 32 view him. You know, Marshawn Nealand was a guy that I mentioned in my most underrated. We had a little round table. you know, he's kind of grown on me as the process has gone on. I think I have him as my 40 something overall prospect, but you know, it wouldn't shock me at all if he goes, you know, somewhere in round two, but it maybe even ahead of that spot. So, you know, I mean, a pretty good looking kid, maybe not the longest guy in the world, but has some good bulk to him. And is a just a really instinctive football player. I kind of like him. So Nealon's an option. You know, Darius Robinson from Missouri would be another one who's right. He's a little bit of a tweener end tackle, but he's also a little bit of a first, second round trickier projection as far as where he might go, but somewhere between 25 and 45, I think.
And a couple guys from Penn State around there too, possibly.
Yeah, Adisa Isaac is another one I like. I mean, I think Chop will go first round, but I'm not 100% sure, but I feel pretty good he will. So he's either a trade up candidate or a really cross your fingers guy, but Adisa Isaac should be there. In the second round, I would imagine. And he's a high character player, typical Penn State athlete, very gifted, maybe not quite as, you know, bursty explosive as what we've seen from some of their edges. But, you know, I dare say that he's at least on par with a lot of the guys they've produced.
Then the other two spots, corner and receiver. Receiver, we know like this is, it's been one good draft over another for that position. How deep is corner though? Where do you, if you want to get a guy that can challenge to start, where do you got to go get him?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I see a player like Max Melton from Rutgers and say, I think he's a day two pick. Maybe he sneaks into round one. I suppose it's possible. I think he's more likely a second or a third round pick. And I think he's starting caliber. He's not super long. He's under 6 foot. The arm length is just below 32. So it's, you know, 31 or something like that, but he's played inside. He's played outside. He's got some versatility. You know, I think he is a starting caliber player on day two, depending on what kind of system you run. TJ Tampa might be a little bit too Emmanuel Forbes-y style wise, but you know, maybe he could fit it. You know, if you like those long limbed corners and that sort of thing. Ennis Rakestraw from Mizzou got hurt late in the season, has missed a big chunk of the pre-draft process. I think there were some people who thought if he could run well, he could sneak in around one. Now he's more likely a day two guy. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably end up getting four or five corners in round one, if I had to guess. And then I would say another, you know, 12 or so in day two, 10 to 12 in day two, somewhere around there. And, you know, I mean, there's some decent options out there. I besides Melton, another guy I like is Kamari Lassiter from Georgia. Mike Sane was still probably an inside guy. You know, I mean, he's very thin, but you heard Harbaugh rave about him. The other coaches at Michigan, he was a very popular player in the locker room. So instinctive. I like him inside, but, you know, I suppose you could try him outside too.
Trades, free agents, quarterbacks, and all kinds of adventures await the Commanders this offseason. Looking for an adventure of your own? The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring has you covered. The country's largest ropes course and zipline park, located in Montgomery County, Maryland, is now open. Named Best Amusement Park and Climbing Destination in the DMV 2 years in a row, the Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is perfect for birthdays, corporate outings, groups, and families. With challenges anywhere from beginner to expert, there is something for all skill levels. Anytime you're thinking about reaching new heights, make sure you know before you go. The Adventure Park at Sandy Spring is the only ACCT accredited park in Maryland or Virginia. Staying on the ground, give axe throwing a try. You can throw at traditional targets or play any number of interactive games. You can even upload your own image. So there you have it, folks. Climbing, ziplining, axes, food, and bonfires right in your backyard. Reserve your adventure today at www.theadventurepark.com/kind. That's www.theadventurepark.com/kind. How about receiver?
I think
how deep does it go? How many rounds can you go because these guys don't need right now a number one with McLaurin. They have Dotson. Right. I still think Dotson can develop a little bit more, but they're going to need more players there. So where's a good spot to get them, and how deep can it go to get a starting quality receiver?
Definitely deeper than last year, at least I feel so, you know, and more talent at the top for that matter. Last year was like the 1 year where we didn't really seem to have that incredible group. But yeah, again, I'm thinking probably somewhere in the order of 5-6 wide receivers in round one, you know, definitely 4, but I think we get at least a fifth one in there. And then the second and third round, I really feel like that is going to be like the happy hunting grounds for receivers. And I mean, everyone from, you know, I mean, like we're kind of dinging guys like Keon Coleman for running the 4.6 at the combine, but man, he's an animal out there. I think he's going to be really good. Ricky Pearsall, better quarterback accuracy, might've been guaranteed a first round pick. Xavier Worthy blazes a combine 40 record and may not get in the first. So that kind of gives you a picture, I think. And there's all different shapes and sizes. Everybody from, you know, Malik Washington, kind of a tiny little water bug guy, up to Johnny Wilson, sort of a, I don't know that he's a day two pick, but the idea being this massive, almost tight end like figure. So I really think that depth is going to stretch into day three. So by even in round four, I think you're going to, you know, maybe there's not a Puka Nacua this year, which is kind of the irony, last year's class not being that great, but I would venture to say there's at least going to be half a dozen day three receivers who do something in this league and become, you know, semi-reliable contributors.
Did you like Emmanuel Forbes last year?
I liked aspects of him. Yeah, the weight was obviously a big hangup. It's like historically thin and it was almost like people had, you know, used the Devontae Smith as an example. Well, hey, look, if you're a receiver and you're that size and you can thrive, why can't you do it at corner? I don't think it's the same thing. But I did love the college production. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the length and the competitiveness seemed to be there. Was he probably miscast in some ways last season? Yeah. Was he, you know, being asked to cover AJ Brown man up? I don't know that I would do that with him, but that's just me. So I think there's an interesting player in there if they can, you know, really drill down and figure out whether his strengths match up with what Dan wants to do defensively. And I suspect they'll better use him than the staff did last year, whether he's a first round pick
right
going forward or not, I don't know.
But I'll be curious because they're going to play a lot more man, and some pressure man that we'll see how he handles it. And, you know, he's going to have a chance to do it. What have you thought? Like, I know Adam Peters has not been in this position, but what have you heard about him over the years as far as like his, you know, his drafting ability or his knowledge or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's regarded as a really keen evaluator, and I think he kind of turned down some interview opportunities before. So obviously, you know, maybe not to the extent of a George Payton or somebody like that. I mean, where his name had been in the cycle for 5, 6, 7 years of GMs, you know, hiring portions and all that. But you know, his name had been out there for a while, and we were always under the impression that he was going to be picky with the spot he selected. You know, it's interesting, obviously, that he's going to a place that was more of a teardown and that he could kind of put his stamp on, I think, you know, as opposed to a team that is sort of needing a little sprucing here and there and then, you know, close to competing. So I don't think most people around the league viewed this job as a microwave dinner, right? This is going to take some time, but at the same time, you know, like Bill Parcells always wanted those situations because he wanted to be able to build the roster 1 to 90 the way he wanted it. And I think there's probably a little bit of that from the GM perspective for Peters. So obviously there were a lot of cooks in the kitchen in San Francisco, which is interesting too. And they've had other guys go on to, you know, be promoted and get jobs elsewhere as well. You know, it's always hard to know exactly who should get the credit for this and who should get the blame for that, because, you know, you hear, oh, that was, you know, that was Shanahan's guy, or, you know, this was the GM's pick. And so, you know, it's difficult, but I know his reputation has always been pretty strong.
I think the rule of thumb is if it's wrong, it's somebody else's guy.
Of course. Always. Yeah.
But like, I do know in talking to some people out there, like, you know, he was a key evaluator in the third to seventh round type player.
Yeah.
So that's like Fred Warner, Drake Greenlaw, Kittle, Purdy. So who are some guys, maybe, are there some, do you have some late round gem possibilities that you really like, and on day three, like if the team gets this guy, I'm really intrigued by him.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, that's a good question. I'll kind of look at the bottom of my top 100 list. Cause oftentimes, you know, I might be higher on somebody.
Sure.
Jalen McMillan, the receiver, we were talking about wide receivers. I know, again, it's not probably the biggest need, but with Samuel gone, you probably have that third slot open. He's not that, right? I mean, Malachi Corley might be more like that, but I think he's probably gone before round four. So McMillan's kind of that borderline day two, day three guy. I have him in my 70s. I don't remember exactly where. And I felt like he's the kind of the perfect connective piece in a receiving group. He can be your number one on, you know, one or two Sundays a year. He can be the guy who contributes even if he only has three catches for 25 yards. You know, he has some punt return ability as well. I like him as a slot, but he could play outside as well. You know, he's really interesting to me, and I think he's going to make his mark somewhere, as long as he's not, if not too much is expected of him, or you know, he's, or not too little for that matter. He's kind of buried. So that's one interesting one. Mason McCormick, the guard out of South Dakota State. You know, I go to the combine and now and watch the workouts, watch the times and all that. And maybe it only really changes my perspective for a dozen guys or, you know, a few. It's not the biggest number ever. You're expecting him to be in a range, but he tested very, very well. He moved extremely well in the O-line drills. You know, if you're just looking at him and not knowing anything about him, you'd assume he went to a Big Ten school or an SEC school, and that may be size-wise, but still, athleticism and moving and just he looked clean. That's what I thought. So I don't know exactly how teams view him as far as where he'll go in the draft, but fourth round could be a spot for him. So that's definitely one there. I'm trying to think of somebody else in the Kieran Amagaji, the Yale offensive tackle. He's another tricky one to project because he missed all but four games last year. And another player, small school guy, who if you saw him on the Yale practice field, you would think, who is that guy? Right? He would stand out from the crowd. When you watch the games, it's almost hilarious to see the size difference between him and some of the defensive linemen he goes up against. But, you know, he's got something that can't be taught. I wish he had been healthy and been able to do more in the pre-draft process than he has so far. I think he's got a workout coming up soon. But this was somebody who was being talked about as a possible top 50, top 75 pick prior to all that. Like before the season, scouts were on him. Now we don't know have a great feel for where he'll go. How early do you take that kind of risk? But again, the length is outstanding. Has that like probably year one red shirt type thing, but I could see him by the end of the year or being a swing tackle possibly. And then by the end of his rookie year being, you know, at least in a spot to possibly start. Like if they're out of contention, you got three or four games at the end of the year, you say, all right, let's make him our left tackle. That's the kind of guy that makes sense to me for that spot of the draft.
And like with this team, this is year one of the regime. So you can take guys like that in there.
Amen.
Well, because even if the guy's a left tackle, right tackle, Andrew Wiley's at right tackle struggled last year. So you're going to need, yep, may want to do something with him, whether now or whenever, just to improve. So there's a lot of ways I think they can go in this draft to work. Now, this is the quarterback portion. So if I saw it right on your last mock, you had JJ McCarthy coming here.
I did. Yeah. I got to clear the air on this one, but go ahead, please.
No, go ahead. I like the reaction to that. Go ahead.
I mean, people are basically laughing at me like that's not going to happen. And I don't think it probably will, you know, especially after talking to some people after that, but I'm telling you, there's some real buzz with him. And I mean, it's not obviously anyone who's followed, you know, the last sort of month or what have you. I mean, does he go to the Giants at six? Does he go to the Patriots at three? Is it a trade up team? Who knows? Right. But he's going somewhere in the top 10. It did feel like Washington had done a lot of work on him, and not that they weren't going to do, you know, they were going to put their diligence in on all these guys. And I know it's been a tight ship that Adam and has run. There haven't been a lot of leaks. This is a good thing, right? Obviously compared to past regimes, yeah, not necessarily for us, but for the football aspect of
it. Yes.
And I just thought, look, he's, you know, let's have some fun with this, right? Could he go there? Possibly. But I would say Jaden Daniels feels like the most likely fit there. I don't know that I say that with great authority, but I say that with more of a gut instinct than anything else. But yeah, I could, I'd give McCarthy about a 12% chance, and I'd give Jaden maybe like a 50% chance or something like that.
I would probably be right there with you. In fact, I had to write a story for ESPN.com where basically it was like, here are their choices and ranking it, putting him in order of how coaches saw it when you talk to them. And more often than not, they're going to say Jaden, but I don't know, like, how much money is anybody putting down on that? I don't know, but that certainly, you know, seems, has been the feeling that you get. But I, the only feeling that matters is the one in Ashburn. And I'm not sure what their feeling is at this. I have, you know, you hear things, but like nothing that you can report because it's not necessarily, it's too, some of it is too outdated. The, what you're hearing, like, oh, I talked to so-and-so. I talked to people early in the year and they'd say one name. Then you'd hear someone else say, well, they talked to so-and-so during the season. They'd say another. And, you know, so that's why we're in this spot. So, yeah.
I mean, and also sometimes the information that it just, I've reminded myself of this every single year, you know, the information you get from, let's say, mid-March till mid-April often is the heart of lying season.
Correct.
But right before that at the combine, I felt like when I look back and I say, where did I go wrong in my mock draft? What did I miss on? What did I forget? And it was all the stuff that I had heard at the combine. I feel like I just need to write these things down. Like, okay, this team is going with this guy, you know, and obviously you can call around and do your reporting after that. But it just sort of feels like the stuff you hear prior to the combine depends and probably not as accurate, but that week can often bear some real truths that end up coming out.
And I think once they start to get to meet these guys in person,
yeah,
and you can start to see, especially a quarterback, is this guy a leader or not? Is this a guy that we can work with or not? And that's why, like, they have the I guess the top 30 visits next week with May and Daniels, which will be key. But, you know, that, so that's why I'm guessing that, you know, that's probably why you're going to start to hear more and more about those guys at the combine. There's just, it's a natural, you know, feeding frenzy for information with that stuff. But what separates, for you, what would separate these quarterbacks at the top? And like, what, when people tell you, or that they tell you they think it'll be Daniels, what do they use as a separator for him?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, I think his running skills, you know, while not Lamar Jackson like, I mean, he still ran for 1200 yards or whatever it was last year, 1100, I don't know the number, but I mean, he was explosive. I don't think he's as elusive as Lamar. He's fast though, you know, and that, you know, having to defend those wide receivers at LSU and deal with the run game was a chore for a lot of teams. So I think the running ability and the deep passing ability kind of give him a floor as a prospect, it's hard to picture him being bad unless he suddenly becomes turnover prone. And he really hasn't been in his career.
Right.
You know, I mean, he had the one year where he had 10 interceptions, everything else has been less. And just the amount of throws of the frequency have gone up and his interceptions have stayed low the last couple of years. So, you know, that alone, I mean, obviously his injuries could be another factor. He's a thinly built guy. You always worry about that a little bit. You know, he's not going to have the same clean looks he did in the LSU offense, but you know, I obviously can see that he's got some poise. He's got some moxie for sure. You know, went through some tough times at Arizona State, but you know, if you're hearing the rumors that obviously Antonio Pierce would love to get him again, he was on that staff at ASU, then, you know, you have to imagine he acquitted himself well in a leadership capacity, because things weren't always going well from 2019 to 2021 at Arizona State. So, and, you know, LSU coaching change, he had to fight for his job. That shows some mental toughness. They didn't just hand it to him just because of the transfer portal and NIL and all that. He had to earn it, whether it was a nominal battle or not, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, there was just something fascinating about him, and he's supposed to be a tough worker as well, but he's also a little bit in that, it's a dangerous comparison, but like in the Zach Wilson comparison, in that I don't think he came into the season viewed as a first round pick, so there is a little bit of a Johnny come lately quality to him. It doesn't really bother me that much, but,
and you can make the case Joe Burrow is exactly that same guy too.
Same thing, right? And he's Burrow's age, 24. Right. I mean, when we first started this process, my thinking was, like we were talking about, they're the kind of team that can draft a project tackle. Well, they can draft a younger quarterback too. That's why I assumed Drake May, especially air raid system, Cliff coming in, felt like that made the most sense. So I guess I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but when you hear people around the league at other teams say Jaden is probably their guy, you got to listen.
Right. And that's where I'm at too, because that is what you hear more often than not. And, yep, you know, there's some who really like him a decent amount more than the other. Like, I think for some people it's Caleb and Jaden. And then for others, right, it might be, you know, it's so crazy, but that's why it's kind of interesting, and why it's such a big deal for them to get it right. Because if you do, they could set this franchise up. You get those, if you can come out of these first two rounds with a quarterback and a left tackle,
yep,
you do that. Like, if either the other guys are just okay contributors, you have set yourself up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about last year, obviously, with Houston. Now, they took a more dramatic approach with the high picks there, but you get Stroud, who's going to be your franchise guy for however long. And you have Will Anderson as the next pick, and, you know, arguably one of their defensive, standouts right away as a rookie. You know, that was a home run draft. And then you add a Tank Dell in round five. Like, if Washington can have that kind of a draft, I mean, you know, where we look back and say, wow, you know, that was a narrative changer, a franchise shifter. That's obviously the dream. And yet the reason I have all four, you know, of those teams seeking quarterbacks at the top, or, you know, teams likely to draft quarterbacks, some of my, you know, my nine teams that can't screw this thing up story, you know, the guy who drafts the dud is automatically put on the fire, yeah, you know, the hot seat. So there's so much pressure around these quarterback picks.
Yep. And Adam Peters, your first pick in Washington, most pressure, you know, no pressure, just get it right. So anyway,
just get Eric, yeah, quarterback right. Yeah.
Just right. Get it right. So Eric, thank you very much. I kept you longer than I think I told you I would. So I love the insight
and
appreciate the work and all that. So thanks a lot for coming on.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon, man.
That's it for this episode. Thanks to Eric for joining me. And by the way, you can follow him on Twitter. He's at Eric Edholm, ERIC_EDHOLM. Give him a follow on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. I guess it's X these days. Anyways, thanks to Eric for joining me. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. I'll be back on Friday with another episode. So I'll talk to you next time.